Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Where can they participate in the sharing economy? So the one asset that people of color 18 to 24 have is their creative capacity, right? It's just like, hey, go do something cool. Go create a video that's super cool. Go write something. Go whatever. And it's like they have an endless abundance of content that they could create. And we're saying, yeah, create that. And then we want to be able to pay you for it.
Welcome to the Schmidt List, the podcast for people dedicated to managing successful projects, developing impactful products, and building engaged teams. And now, here's your host, Kurt Schmidt.
Mondo.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
I am golden. Thanks for having me up here. And like, hey, let's just have this conversation right now.
I'm excited. Yes. I'm excited to be talking to you. So how did you get into tech? Where did this all start? Were you like a tinkerer when you were younger and you liked computers? And like, how did you end up as a tech guy?
No, so there's a very defined story. So January 7th, 2010, at the time I was an educator and I had just got done playing basketball because that was my journey up to that date. Like, hey, I'm going to hoop. I'm going to be a professional athlete.
Nice.
And didn't make it. And so at 25, I was just like, yeah, I'm going to be done. That was like the hang up the shoes. And so I became an educator in St. Paul. And then, like I said, January 7, 2010, I was sitting in front of the TV, flicking through channels, and I landed on a special called Planet of the Apps. And it was Apple's 1 hour special saying, hey, apps are going to be a big deal.
Yeah.
If you're a developer, you should kind of come over and develop some cool stuff. And literally from that moment, I was like, hey, I want to do that, something in that space. Mm. And for the next 6 years, I tried to develop stuff. I tried, or I hired somebody, or I just figured it out. And so I made about 33 trillion mistakes, spent a whole bunch of money with those mistakes. And yeah, here we are. Now I make less mistakes.
Because you made all those mistakes.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's like the best way to put it. And so I have no background in tech, no anything. And so I feel like I've found my lane though now, and I'm excited about it.
That's really cool.
Yes.
So what are you doing these days? I know you're doing a lot in the education space. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So education has kind of been like everything has come full circle.
Yeah, and I was going to say all the tech stuff and everything, and now you're...
Yeah, now it's education. And so for me, my strength is, oh, there's a problem. How do we wrap tech around it to have a scalable solution? And so now it's like I built a bunch of stuff, partnered with a lot of different people to build cool stuff. And over time, I built a lot of stuff for education. And that's because I was an educator for 6-7 years. Mm. And so my business partner, Dario, who is the founder of Youth Lens 360, he also does a lot in education. And so when we came together, like, hey, we just got to join forces and create this Voltron tech thing. And so now it's like, how do we build solutions that just disrupt the inequities in education? And so starting 2020, that is like full focus of like education specific. We're not doing anything outside of that. And I feel like it's going to be really exciting because essentially our model is how do we build the platforms that we can scale into classrooms, but then how do we go into the community and find the creatives to power those solutions? And so I use Netflix as a model a lot. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, Netflix built an amazing solution that anybody can use anywhere, right? Even if you're just borrowing somebody else's credentials. but the money that they spend, I don't know what they spend on the tech, but last year they spent $6 billion on original content. And so it's like, oh, original content is king. And so how do we... again, build similar platforms where educators can use across the country, but our competitive advantage is our original content. And we go get that original content from communities of color. And that's our move. That's our motive.
So how does that start? Like, let's say, is it that you identify the need first, you identify the place first, the community first, like where does it start? And then how do you engage and make that start to happen?
Yeah.
What's the framework there?
So I'll start with a backstory. We'll just talk about one specific platform. So one of the platforms that I built is called Shorties, and Shorties is a hybrid for short stories. And so I remember being back in school, and we'll go out and we have amazing time at recess, right? Whether it's basketball, football, it's like Super Bowl every day. And then we would come back into the classroom, and any good teacher to bring the class back to a reasonable level would say, oh, it's independent reading time. Mm-hmm. And so every day I would go to the library and grab a book, and I would fake read because the books didn't look like me. Nothing in there sounded like anything that I would do. And so I was like, oh, well, I literally fake. I didn't read a book cover to cover till I was 20 years old. And so fast forward to when I became an educator, I was in classrooms and I was like, oh, black boys are still fake reading the same way I did 20 years ago. And so that's where the hook was like, oh, this solution or this problem still hasn't been solved. So Mondo, go build something. And so that's how it just started. Like, I just built a solution to a problem that I had because I was intimately connected to it. And then being around a lot of students, I was just like, oh, let me ask you some questions on what would make this reading platform more engaging. And so I was just immersed in the problem enough to be able to bring a solution to life. And yeah, here we are now where it's like, we feel like we have a stable platform, and now it's just developing the content.
So what's the school's response? Like, when you go and approach these schools and say, hey, we have this program, this opportunity, how do you, like, what is their reaction? Are they like, oh, yeah, this makes total sense. Let's do that.
Yeah. And so here's like the growth, the thing that's awesome, and then the thing like our barrier. So the awesome thing is, man, we've been looking for you, or we've been looking for some type of culturally relevant content that we can give to our teachers. Mm-hmm. The barrier has been, we don't have enough content to serve you for an entire year. And so one of the struggles that I had, when I was going out and talking to creatives, meaning writers and illustrators in the community, they were like, Mondo, this is amazing, but you're just like every other person that will come and sell us this dream, but not be able to pay us what we're worth. Mm-hmm. And so it made me slow down and reflect and say, oh, I didn't understand that that was a thing for the creative economy. And so we slowed down and figured out, or we're working through figuring out, how do we pool together the resources to be able to pay creatives at least somewhat what they are, valued at, right?
Yep.
And so that's been our barrier. It's like, hey, schools want to opt in, but it's like, I need more content as an institution. And so that's where we're at right now, and trying to just build our library of content.
Got it. And so as you're building that library, like, how are you going about that? Is it all being digitized, and like, is it going to be in one central place? Like, what's kind of the launch pad for it?
Yeah. So let's say we have multiple different platforms that engage in a different way. Okay. So Shorties focuses on, it's a digital library of culturally relevant short stories, right? And we really focus on third grade. And so, because at the end of third grade, if you're not reading proficiently, you're three times more likely to drop out of high school, and you're four times more likely to go to prison if you drop out of high school. And so it's like, okay, that's where people are dropping off, or people of color. Actually, the data says that only 10% of low-income black boys read proficiently as they enter fourth grade. Okay. And so it's like, wow, there's that school-to-prison pipeline that a lot of educators talk about. And so Shorties really focuses on solving that problem. Then there's a completely different platform called Music Nerds, where we take, music, like current music, and we wrap lessons around contemporary music that people are engaging in. So I'll give you an example. So let's say you're in a political science class, and it's like, hey, I want to talk about taxes. And so we then take a song, let's say by J. Cole, which is called Brackets, where he talks about taxes, how it impacts him who's making millions of dollars, and all the way to how it impacts the mother in the community that doesn't have a lot of money. Mm-hmm. Well, if you start a lesson and you play a J. Cole song to engage the class, and then you wrapped all the other content around it, like, oh, okay, here's what J. Cole is talking about with taxes. And then here's like the Trump initiative for the tax cuts from last year. And it's like, oh, well, I'm now more interested in it because one of my favorite artists, J. Cole, was talking about taxes, and now I see the power of taxes, right? Mm-hmm. And so we're building out content for that. And then thirdly, we have a platform called Leads, which is like, how do we build the best utility belt of original content? This is like a lot of mini documentaries for people to go and educate around diversity and inclusion. And so the best way we put it is like, hey, there's a lot of people that can move people to action, whether it's in schools or it's in corporations, but they don't have the tools to be able to go engage, or there's not a platform where it's like, we want to go find the best people to come in and engage our community, our employees or whatever. And so we're building that and we're excited about it. So like that's like at a broad vision, like the different platforms that we have and like how we lean into the creative economy to build that content. It's funny because as we've been going through like a branding cycle of like, how do we say that in a more consolidated fashion? And so we learned that trying to explain all these different platforms has been kind of tough. Like when you think about Salesforce, they don't break down all the different tools that they have, right? And so we just say we're trying to impact education and disrupt inequities, and we do it in a lot of different ways. Mm-hmm. And so that's where we're at.
And so how do you identify, is it a lot of these schools coming to you, or is it you going and pitching them? How does that process work?
Right. So one of the benefits of working with my ace in the hole, Dario, is they've done a lot of work with a lot of superintendents. Okay. And so having that relationship with superintendents has been super helpful. I'd like to note, like, you know, I talked about earlier, the student conference that we put on October 21st, which mm-hmm. was 1,500 students from 40 different districts that came together to talk about the good and bad of education and how they think it should be changed. And so that was informative for us, right? It's like, oh, okay, well, if you have high school students from all around Minnesota saying this is what we want, well, then we just go build those solutions, or at least try to, right? Mm-hmm. And so that has been super helpful. And just asking the questions to the right people. It's been so funny where it's like, hey, education is broken, but the people that are trying to fix it haven't been in the classroom for 10, 20, 30 years.
Yeah.
Well, just go ask the students and they'll tell you exactly what they need. And so that's just been our motto.
Well, and that's, I think that's very different than education in the past, where it's like, well, I don't care what you think you need, student.
Right.
We have this curriculum that's been approved by X amount of committees and yep. all this other stuff. So you take it or leave it.
Yeah, the interesting
thing. I can imagine breaking through that mindset, though, is not easy.
It's not easy, but then when you say, like, well, look at your class, like, you got people sleep, so you might want to change your strategy a little bit. And honestly, for educators that have been in it for a while, especially in urban areas, a lot of the times they go outside of what they're given to engage kids anyways, and they're like, we got to go on the internet somewhere and find more engaging content. And so when you talk to teacher by teacher, they're like, oh, absolutely, we'll love to adopt this, because this is what we do anyways, just on our own time. And they mm-hmm. build up their own kind of tool belt of things to engage kids. And so we're just trying to solve the problem for those teachers to say, here's an easier way, we'll spoon feed you a whole curriculum. So yeah,
just package it up.
Yep. And not to say it's that easy, sure. But I think it's that easy if you do it the right way. It's like, young people are learning. They're, whether it's in school or out of school, they are learning. They're going to YouTube University and learning what they want to learn. And
yep.
so instead of just learning on that platform, like, let's find a way for us as people of color to build that content. I honestly believe we can become the economic engine for the Twin Cities. And when I think specifically of people of color, and we think about it as like the new sharing economy, right? To take a deeper dive, if you don't mind, like, I think about like the main two, you know, Uber and Lyft, sharing economy, right? And then Airbnb. It's like they're making hand over fist, like, impact or money or giving whatever.
Yeah.
But 18 to 24 in an urban community, typically they're not able to participate. And that's not Uber, Lyft, or Airbnb's fault, but they're not able to participate because the car isn't new enough, or they don't have insurance or whatever.
They don't own a house.
Right, or they don't own a house, right? And so it's like, well, where can they participate in the sharing economy? So the one asset that people of color 18 to 24 have is their creative capacity, right? It's just like, hey, go do something cool. Go create a video that's super cool. Go write something. Go whatever. And it's like they have an endless abundance of content that they could create. And we're saying, yeah, create that. And then we want to be able to pay you for it. Mm-hmm. So
and be the distributor, right?
And be the distributor.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm so excited. I like,
it seems like a really amazing opportunity, because I'm guessing also on that creative side. So we talked about the school stuff and like how do you get them engaged? And there's one thing there I'm going to put a pin in and I'll come back to it. But on the creative side, I can see also an opportunity for you to be able to create more educational resources to teach those younger creatives how to create those videos, that music, those stories and things as well, right?
Yeah, so our big vision, let's just say we can hop 5 years from now.
Let's do it.
We want to, instead of having this one huge headquarters, our goal is how do we go buy up houses in the community and have creative team studios, right? And so in communities of color, you know, trap house, drug dealer house, whatever, you know where that house is. And it's like, well, a lot of young people fall into that because that's the only way to make money or that's the family that they then connected to. But there's no alternative. So we're saying, yo, well, let's go buy up houses where it's like, yo, you can go in there and that's the creative house to learn audio engineering, or that's the creative house to learn art and illustration. And so for us, it's that becomes the asset, right? It's just how do you nurture that talent to say you are amazing, your gift is creativity, and here's a way to monetize it, stepping into this space, stepping into this house. That's, we got one over north, or we got one on Rondo, we got one on the east side. And it's like, I don't know, we just see this vision of really tapping into the community, and because they then become the greatest asset. I'll make a parallel, because I've been thinking about this a lot lately. Tyler Perry, in my opinion, is genius. I feel that in 20 years he will be one of the most powerful and impactful people in America. And the reason I say that is because Hollywood is trying to diversify, or people in general are trying to diversify. And so he just built a studio, a $250 million studio that is as big as all three of the main studios combined. And it's like, well, where do you think all the diverse talent is going to go now? It's like, forget Hollywood.
Right.
We're all going to Atlanta to build stuff here. Right?
Yeah, right.
And so in 2040, the numbers, the data says that that's going to be the shift where the majority of America will be black or brown. And so if all the black and brown people are creating in Atlanta, well, like, who do you think is controlling the narrative, the content coming out of Atlanta? And so I look at him as a model to say, hey, let's do the same thing for education, where it's like, let's go right into the community and find those young creatives who know how to engage students and nurture them and provide them opportunity to engage kids across the country.
I see a lot of parallels with what you're talking about. It makes a lot of sense. So let me go back to the teacher thing, because one of the things that I see, this happens in business, and I can imagine you have the same thing in classroom, because you told a little anecdote there that I really got a kick out of, where you said, like, your students are sleeping in your class. So, you know, but the mentality that I see with other leaders, let alone whether it's a school or a business, is like, well, that's that kid is bad. It's not that my leadership is bad. It's not that I don't know how to teach a class. It's just this group of kids is not so great. You know,
as an educator, we had to push against that cultural mindset of like, hey, you come to school to learn, and if you're being disruptive in the classroom, it's your fault, and you need to fix your ways to step back into my classroom and learn.
Exactly.
And so I, you know, honestly, it's, if you look at education as a business, right, and your output is kids that are engaged in class, or your output is smart individual, whatever, however you want to rate it, like, your business is not producing good quality product, right? Black boys are failing at an amazing rate. Therefore, you need to change the systems within your organization to build, quote unquote, a better product, a better black boy that is ready to engage in real life. And so I think that is starting to shift a little bit, especially being that, you know, now a lot of the big corporations aren't expecting you to have a 4-year college degree. Like, if you got the skills, if you got the talent, like, come work for us, right? And so I think schools are starting to see, like, man, we're starting to lose our handle on this thing where go to school, get good grades so you can go to college, get good grades so you can get a good job. Well, like, that narrative is starting to die. And so I think schools are starting to recognize that it's starting to die, and they're starting to change a little bit. It could be a lot faster, but it's starting to change.
And how are you promoting this platform? Like, what's been working for you to get the word out? Obviously, like you mentioned, you have the network of superintendents, but how do you start getting it, spreading it even further? And what have you seen working for you, and what's not been working?
Yeah, I would say that as we're closing the end of this year, that has been our biggest growth or the thing that we're working through is like, how do we tell that story? Right. And so for a while it was Mondo, the black tech guy, is building cool tech. Dario at Youth Lens 360 is working with youth to create amazing media and marketing other companies. And so now as we're coming together, it's like, what is that language? How are we marketing? How are we telling that story? And honestly, like, we're right in the middle of that right now. And it's been a crazy learning experience to figure out how we bridge that gap. And so I wish I can say we figured it out, sure. But we haven't figured it out yet. But hopefully, you know, next year, if you invite me back, we'll say, like, hey, we figured it out.
Yeah, I would love that. Yeah, because it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. You make a ton of mistakes for a while. Eventually, you find, like, the right way to move forward, right? You know, but if you're not trying, if you're not banging your head against the wall, you're never going to see the cracks on where you can, you know, get in there and hit the future.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. And we're trying to lean into, do we sell original content, culturally relevant content? Are we selling, like, we're empowering the creative economy? You know, is it something else that we don't see? And so we're really trying to figure that out. And so one of the things that we're trying to lean into right now is, how do we really engage the philanthropic community, right? And so based on last I checked, Minnesota's philanthropic community is number two in the country for the amount of money they spend on the arts. And so how do we shape a narrative that says this could become an economic engine for the arts, where it's like, right now we give you money, you go do what you do, and then you come back for more money later, and you come back for more money later, because creatives, and at least in our economy, haven't figured out how to monetize their genius yet.
Yeah, no.
And so right. And so we're trying to say, like, hey, we could become that economic engine, but we need enough philanthropic partners to see that as well and say, like, we are a for-profit business, but are you willing to sponsor X amount of creatives or X amount of, you know, resources to create these stories or whatever? Mm-hmm. Because that could be the kickstart of something huge in the Twin Cities. And I don't know if you've seen the signs everywhere that says, like, Minnesota is worst in the nation for educating kids of color, right? And so if that's the narrative, and rather it's philanthropic community or big companies, it's like, if somebody lands here and they see that and you're trying to recruit diverse talent, they're not going to come here.
Right.
And so everybody, in my opinion, has to invest in, how do we change that perception of Minnesota education, or else it's going to continue to be what it is.
Yeah, right. Which is not great.
Right. So
something's got to be done.
And we're just trying to say, like, we can help with that. You know, we can help with that.
Yeah.
Like, let us change it.
Well, and again, like, it's interesting challenges, because you've got an old institution, these schools and things, that may have be a little stuck in their own, you know, kind of their own worst enemy in some cases. And then, like you said, you've also got the challenge of finding and engaging these creators in a way that gets them committed to it, right? Not just like, well, I'll do a video and then I'm done, or, you know, things like that, right? But creating some sort of continual supply chain, if you will, of great content into that. I can see it definitely figure out, but it's going to take people power. You just got to get the word out, you know, right?
It is. And it's having the resources to do it. So
yeah.
We've been blessed to have, like, an early pilot. So we had a solid investment from Knight Foundation, and we're super grateful for Knight. It was a 6-month pilot that ends at the end of this year, to say, like, all right, how do you cultivate young entrepreneurs, right? And so that's 18 to 24. And one of the things we were like, well, we got to get them the right tools, and then we got to give them the right mentorship, and then blah, blah, blah. Well, one of the things that we learned is the tools is number one. First, like, if you don't have the right tools, you can't create.
Yeah.
But number two is just having any type of stable income, right? To say, I can rely on this for the next 3 months, 6 months, 10 months, or whatever. And not to say, like, hey, we got to pay you $30,000, but yo, can you give me $300 a week, right? Or whatever it is, because that then puts me in position to where, as a creator, I don't have to worry about putting food on the table, even at the basic level.
Right.
And so it's been a great learning experience for us, because now as we go raise or look for more capital, we realize, like, yeah, just put people in a comfortable enough position to where they don't have to go work at Macy's just to make it. They can just create, right? Can you pay somebody at $12 an hour to just create? And then they'll invest their time or their talent into this thing if you're giving them just enough, at least to start.
Is it just the social economical sort of thing, or is it sort of this mindset of, like, well, no, like you can't just go and be a creator and make money. What are some of the barriers in a mindset sort of space for them?
Yeah, so I think it's a both and. So if you think about if you are up until 18, you typically have a range of different support systems. You have support in school. You can go to the local rec center and you have mentorship.
Counselors.
You can go to, right. There's all these things.
Yep.
And then society says, well, at 18, you either go get a job or go to college. Mm-hmm. Right. And so if you don't choose to go to college, like mentorship is just over. Like, where else do I look
there's
for
no
guidance?
Mentorship right. Anywhere, right.
And so a lot of the times, the young people we connect with, it's like, yo, we're super grateful for you guys as an organization supporting us because we didn't know where else to turn, right? And so even just like, hey, young people coming in and having conversation about life because they got a community of other people that are going through the same thing has been so valuable. And we didn't even think that that was really a thing, right? And so that's been super powerful. But then on the flip side, it is like, you have enough talent right now to where you can go make some money, right? Not saying that you don't have to go to college. You can still go and sharpen your skills and build your network. But Dario does a great job of this. So backstory, YouthLens 360, which is the company that Dario, my business partner, founded 3.5 years ago, started with one computer, one camera, and $10,000, right? And over the course of the last 3.5 years, he's generated over $500,000 in revenue working with these young creatives. So over that time, he's been able to birth over 50 young entrepreneurs being creative through video creativity, right? Mm-hmm. And so what does that do for them? It's like, oh, okay, well, we're running around here creating music videos for $100 a pop, right?
Yep.
Well, no, you can go to 3M or you can go to Best Buy or you can go here. I'll be kind of the intermediary to put you in position to do this. And now I can make $3,000 per video or whatever. And so one of the things that he's been instrumental in is finding that young talent that is already amazing and just positioning them to be able to monetize their greatness. Mm-hmm. And so now we're like, okay, well, we've been doing that, going and chasing contracts. We could also do that by building our own like distribution platform to where we have reoccurring revenue and like we don't have to go chase contracts all the time.
Right.
And so that's the move.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
I think it's great.
I'm excited. I'm so excited.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm excited too because I mean, my entrepreneurial sort of headspace, I just see so much opportunity in this right away. And then plus the great impact of it. Right. And the problem you're dealing with is not necessarily institutional problem. It's a people problem, right? It's I have to convince these 18 to 24 year olds that they have something of value that they can give and that they will get value in respect. And then I have this institutional sort of side that's like, well, this is kind of new and weird. I think it's important and we need stuff like this, but you know, how can we commit to it? You know, and a lot of that is kind of selling in a way, right? It's just kind of, I mean, I know selling got a bad connotation to it.
No, like, it's all good. You're right.
Spot on. But you really got to learn how to get that buy-in from folks, right?
Yeah, it's been interesting. So I talk about Dario a lot, right? Because the way we complement each other is kind of amazing. And so if there's any sports fans, any basketball fans listening, I use an analogy of like, I'm Phil Jackson, right? Mm-hmm. I love to just create the triangle offense, like the system that makes everything work. And where Dario is the Magic Johnson, he is out, he is networking, and he's passing the ball to the right creative to be able to go execute at a high level.
Yeah.
And so in that, we've been able to build a lot of trust with foundations or schools or organizations because Dario is that sharp person.
Yep.
We trust Dario. And if Dario trusts that young person, we then by default must trust that young person too.
Right.
And so it's been amazing, like navigating this whole thing because of the relationships that we've built over the last decade. Mm-hmm. Right. And now we're coming together saying, now we're going to do this together.
You're going to activate all this.
Right.
At once. Yeah.
Right. And so that's like between me and him, we talk about Voltron a lot. Like this is Voltron coming together to make something amazing happen.
That's really cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you for joining me. So if I want to learn more about how I can help in this, where should I go? Where can I find out more info, Mondo?
Yeah, so the website right now is Team Studios, TEAM studios.org. And there you can see like all the different ed tech platforms we have moving around, or like follow me on IG @TheBlackTechGuy or @TheBlackTechGuy anywhere.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's everywhere.
But, you know, IG is where I...
Wait, are you on TikTok?
I am not. My daughter tried to get me on there. I was like, you know, this might not be for me. So
yeah, I've been talking about it more on the show because it's just fascinating. I got addicted to it.
Really?
Yeah. Well, okay. my 11-year-old son loves it, and he's got like a locked account with a couple of his friends that they mess around with each other and stuff. And I don't know what it is. It's just super addicting.
Like, I mean, my daughter, 12, right, and similar age, she's like on it all the time. I'm like, it looks cool, but I feel like I'm too old to be on it or something.
I know. The funny thing is that I read statistics like it's getting older like every day.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like fast. Like it's stealing a lot of thunder from other things. Anyways, we do a whole TikTok episode.
Right.
Anyways, thank you so much. I learned so much today, and I'm really excited for the work that you're doing. I think it's really important, and I'm going to encourage everybody here to go and check out the website. You'll be able to find it on the website in the show notes and all that stuff. So thank you again.
Awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Schmidt List. If you want to learn more about how Foundry accelerates innovation, check out foundrymakes.com. And if you'd like me to speak about establishing a growth mindset at your conference or with your team, drop me a note at kurt@foundrymakes.com. Oh, and the next time you're on the internet, head to iTunes and leave the show a review. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend, because sharing is caring. I truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to the show, and I hope you have a fantastic week.